Although your garden is likely sleeping under a blanket of white right now, it's time to start dreaming of spring. Today, we're going to make some New Year's resolutions for our gardens. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. This hour, as we dream about and plan for the next growing season, we'd like to hear your gardening resolutions for 2018. Horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, will be here. We'll talk resolutions, answer your questions, and get some great suggestions for warm, green indoor gardens to visit during the winter months. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and the ground is frozen, but things are in full bloom in all of the seed catalogs. As we dream about and plan for the next growing season, we want to hear your gardening resolutions for 2018. Of course, we'll also answer your questions. Horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension is here today. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, is also here. Hi, Aaron.
Good morning.
Happy New Year to you both.
Yeah, thanks. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much. And before we get into gardening resolutions, a lot of us, me included, we struggle when it's this cold for this long, but a great way to beat the winter blues is to go to an indoor garden somewhere, at least to take a nice break from winter. So let's talk about some of the places we can go in Iowa to visit summer for a few minutes. And you can make your suggestions as well, 866-780-9100. And of course, Aaron, we'll start with Ryman Gardens.
Yes.
In Ames, because,
yes,
of course, that's where you are. What do you have going on at the gardens right now?
Well, we're just wrapping up our holiday train exhibit, which goes through this weekend. And then starting in 2 weeks, we'll be opening an orchid exhibit for the remainder of winter. And orchids are so much fun this time of year. Just, it's so nice to see all that color and fragrance and all of that when it's so white or brown and cold outside.
Absolutely. And the orchid exhibit, that's an annual tradition for you, right?
It is. Yes.
How do you get all those blooms together in the middle of January?
Well, we don't have an orchid collection at Ryman Gardens. They take a tremendous amount of space. I don't know that most folks realize when you visit public gardens that have these huge orchid exhibits, they have four times as many orchids as you see somewhere in the back that are not blooming. And we just don't have that type of space. So we bring all of ours in. We buy them in and utilize them from wholesalers in Florida and Hawaii and some other places. And then what we really, really like, we'll hold on to. But we, you know, nobody ever complains about their greenhouse being too big, and we certainly don't. And so we hold on to the ones we really love. But most of them get sold as non-blooming orchids at our plant sale in May.
Interesting. And how do you ship them when it's this cold?
With a lot of packing in a heated trailer.
That, I'm sure there's a whole industry built on the logistics. Yeah.
Well, it costs extra, too. But
I'm sure it does.
They all go into sleeves and boxes. They get put into a basically like a refrigerated truck, just the opposite. And you have to coordinate unloading so that you can get them right into the warm spot. And they can't sit on a dock, obviously. So that all has to be coordinated, but it's certainly possible.
So how do you manage the indoor environment at Ryman Gardens as well? Because, I mean, it's not as big as the botanical gardens down in Des Moines. We'll talk
right
about those in just a moment. But still, that's a large space to heat and humidify. How do you do it?
Well, you know, there's a computer system that helps us with this. And just like a thermostat at home, except for it monitors a lot more factors like humidity like air movement and some other things too. And it will make adjustments just like your thermostat does for your furnace to help maintain those parameters within the conservatory. And of course, when it gets super cold like it does, like it just did and still is in some way, we often have, you know, if the temperatures dip too low, the system actually calls the horticulturalist in charge to let them know that there's something wrong. And there are many times that they end up coming in the middle of the night to see that a valve hasn't turned on, and so there's not enough heat. Or the other day we had a pane of glass break, and that was a big deal. So,
oh wow,
you know, figuring out how to deal with that stuff and just dealing with it. But it is a lot. It is a lot of work, but it creates a really great spot, especially this time of year.
Absolutely. And of course, you go to Ryman Gardens every day, I would assume.
Yeah.
What do you like to do to just enjoy the space and feel like you are taking a little break from winter?
I think just sitting and enjoying. Usually these places, so this time of year, you know, so many indoor spaces are really dry, and the conservatory is always nice and humid. So it just feels nice in there because of that humidity. It's usually a little bit warmer, which is very nice. And especially with the things like the orchid show and some of the other things that we have blooming in the conservatory, it always smells so nice in there. So, and of course, we have the butterflies too. So if you really want some action, you go sit in the butterfly wing, which is usually even warmer and even more humid. And there's lots of pretty insects flying around.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. Well, and I know you're also a father of small children.
Yes.
So I know a lot of parents of small children who have claimed that the local garden, indoor garden space near them has kept them sane during
yes.
the winter months. So it's a great place to visit with
yes.
kids, too.
And we do a lot of programming this time of year indoors to help with those groups of people, too.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of the other favorites around the state. And Richard, you can definitely chime in as well. The Greater Des Moines Botanical Garden, of course, is a very high profile
yes.
one, a very big space. What do you
yeah.
like to see there?
So the Greater Des Moines Botanical Garden is just one of the largest ones in the state. I think their conservatory is nearly an acre in size. So they have a much bigger area. I like the variety of plants that they have in their conservatory because they have both arid stuff, but a lot of tropical stuff. And they're always doing really interesting things in their show house that are inspiring and Pinterest-worthy and all of those things, which is a lot of fun. They have an amazing collection. They do have a small collection of orchids. They also have an amazing collection of a very colorful plant, coleus, which seems really common, but you get into that. It's mostly in their show house. You get in there and the variety and the colors, and it's really fun to see, especially this time of year.
What are some of the other places around the state that we can go?
Well, in western Iowa, you can cross the river and go to Omaha. And we have Lauritzen Gardens just across the river north of Interstate 80. They have a 17,500 square foot conservatory, which mm-hmm. is great. And then just south of there is the Henry Dorley Zoo. And they have the Lead Jungle, which has plants and animals native to rainforests across the world. And also a desert dome where they have plants and, again, animals native to desert environments. So very nice places to visit.
Absolutely.
The other cool thing about Lauritzen is one of their greenhouse areas is actually a temperate, almost Mediterranean climate. So think like Charleston, South Carolina, and that's the plant palette that's in it. And they actually, I think they check the weather in Charleston once a week and change the temperatures in the conservatory to match it.
Wonder
so do they have snow this week?
I don't know. But they do have
I
think they have a lot of camellias in there and some other stuff that we just can't quite grow here in Iowa, but you can a little bit further south.
Very nice. I wonder if they have to kick people out at the end of the day. No, just
yeah.
leave. You have to go home. You can't stay here. Any other indoor gardens in Iowa?
Well, there's the Quad City Botanic Garden, and that's in Rock Island, just across the river.
Yeah.
In the Quad City area, so that's another place. A very nice, very attractive conservatory.
Mm-hmm. All right. And is there in Dubuque, isn't there, along with the Dubuque Arboretum, a botanical garden as well?
They do have a botanical garden there. They don't have an indoor conservatory there, but they do have a lovely dwarf conifer collection. They have a nice Japanese garden. And these are two types of gardens in particular that look really nice even in the winter.
All right. And now I do know people who create this kind of space in their home as well. I mean, that's a lot more challenging. But I have a neighbor. I drive past her house and I can see, the blooms against the glass of her small greenhouse. And I think I'd like to be in there. How would you create that kind of space at home?
I think, one of the big challenges at home is, I think, humidity. So often, you know, the way we heat our homes really dries the air out, and the air naturally this time of year has a lot less moisture in it. So if you can figure out how to add humidity to the air, and spraying misting water in the air doesn't do it. You need to use a humidifier. You need to use some other methods if you're trying to do that kind of thing. I think that's the hardest part. I mean, you can heat it. You can make sure there's enough light. Those are relatively straightforward things to do. The humidity, I think, this time of year is really
and
difficult.
A really good heat source.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, reliable.
Reliable, dependable.
So there's no, not going to you're not going to get a text or a call in the middle of the night
right,
when things stop
right.
working. All right. Well, some wonderful spaces to visit. Did we miss anything on the list?
In terms of conservatories, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure we have.
Well, if we did, let us know. If there's
yes,
something
please.
That we missed, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So let's talk a little bit about resolutions. I mean, this is the time of year when we plan and we dream a little bit. I know those garden catalogs get a lot of us through these dark cold days. Richard, what are you thinking about for 2018?
Basically, to exercise restraint. When I go to garden centers and nurseries in the spring and summer, I'm kind of like a kid in a candy shop, and you just can't buy everything, so you have to be careful.
This sounds like perhaps an annual resolution.
Yes, yes. Which I usually break, but
right,
I try.
Right. So do you spend a lot of time thumbing through those catalogs this time of year?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
And of course, they've been arriving
sure.
since, I don't know, October.
Yeah, early December, yes. So yeah, you look at those. There are so many different companies, and they have so many different things. It's fun just to look through there and see what they have and compare prices and things like that.
Absolutely. And I find myself, I don't necessarily buy the things, but I make plans to buy all the things. I get a little carried away, you know, coming up with ideas. It's a little easy to get carried away on those descriptions of things as well. You think, well, that must be the most amazing plant ever.
Yes, they are very, very well thought of as far as promoting that product. And so you can't miss it up or pass it up.
Right, absolutely. So, Aaron, how about you?
I don't know. You know, I have so many, I probably won't call them resolutions. They're probably more like goals for 2018 because it's a lot of resolutions to make. But one of the big ones on mine is to spend more time in the garden and less time actually gardening. I spend a lot of time creating this space that is really wonderful, and then I don't actually spend the time to enjoy it, which I think a lot of gardeners suffer from, actually. You just can't help it, almost. And, you know, it's a labor of love, of course, but it is something that I would like to spend more time sharing with friends and enjoying myself.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about some 2018 goals in a moment. We'd also love to hear your resolutions for your garden in 2018, your questions about some of those plants you may be looking at in the garden catalogs right now. Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. With me today, Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, the first Horticulture Day of 2018. We're talking about resolutions for 2018 in our gardens. We'd love to hear your resolutions. We'd love to hear your questions as well. 866-780-9100. This is a time of year when a lot of us spend time looking at the gardening catalogs or websites and thinking about new things we'd like to try. If you've got questions, we can answer them. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, is here. Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And we've got a question from Dave in Des Moines. He says, I plan to try to add more flowers to my vegetable garden this year, both edible and to attract butterflies. Can you please offer some good suggestions or some resources I can investigate this winter?
We actually have a publication on our website that you can find. I'm not sure exactly on the name of the or the title of the publication, but I would look basically go on the internet, go to Iowa State University, go to their website, and in the search box, print or type in plants for bees and butterflies. And I think it should go to it. And then they can look at that list that they provide there.
Mm-hmm. All right. And I mean, working flowers into the vegetable garden is it's a really fun idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in terms of especially edible ones, because you treat your vegetable garden differently, and one of the big challenges with growing like edible flowers is making sure that they are treated like a food crop instead of as an ornamental crop in terms of how they're, if anything, sprayed on them or those types of things. And so incorporating them in your vegetable garden works really well for that because you're going to be doing that for your vegetables anyway. The ones that come to mind right away are like Johnny Jump Ups or violas are edible, and so are marigolds. And signet marigolds in particular.
Specifically, yes.
Are a good garnish that is edible. I will say, though, that I've had marigolds before, and they taste a lot like they smell. So use them sparingly.
And as far as bees and butterflies are concerned, most of them are not really fond of many of the annual flowers. They're just not. They tend to be more fond of some of the perennial plants, some of the trees and shrubs. So as far as the annuals, maybe not so much. But as far as the perennials, definitely yes.
All right. Are there any flowers that are particularly beneficial to plant in your vegetable garden?
Not really. There's kind of this theory that if you plant certain things like marigolds, for example, that would deter maybe rabbit browsing in the garden. It doesn't work. That it might maybe deter some insects, but that doesn't really work. So really, it's more we do that for the benefit as far as the beauty of putting them in the garden.
All right. So if you think they're pretty, go ahead and
That's fine.
Yeah.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions, with your New Year's resolutions for your garden. Nancy is on the line in Adel. Hi, Nancy. Hey, Nancy, I need you to turn down your radio.
I've turned it down.
Okay, great. What's your question?
My question is, how can I get my Christmas cactus to come back enough to bloom? This year I only had two blooms on it, and at one time it was just covered with blooms.
Well, basically it's a short day plant, and that's important. And so they tend to bloom basically sometime beginning maybe as early as early November through maybe January. But they are a short day plant, which means for them to flower, they need short days beginning in late summer. And so you want to put the Christmas cactus in a room that receives just natural light, no lighting at night. And so it might be an unused bedroom, whatever, but it should be in a room where it receives bright light, but no artificial lighting at night. And so if you do that, and as the days get shorter in late summer and fall, that triggers flower development, and then it should bloom sometime that winter. So that's the key, is putting in a room that doesn't have any artificial lighting at night. That's the key there for those.
I wondered, too, if it had something to do. This plant has been in this pot several years. I wondered, too, if it had to do with maybe I need to change the soil because it is hard.
Yeah, no, typically you don't. They actually prefer to be pot-bound, and so that shouldn't be an issue. They can stay in the same pot typically for several years, no problem whatsoever. So that shouldn't be the issue. Now, you should fertilize. You want a nice, healthy plant, obviously. And so you want to fertilize maybe in the spring and summer a little bit. So when you water periodically, add some fertilizer to it. But just good care and making sure they have the short days in the fall and early winter is the key.
Mm-hmm.
And Nancy, have you changed how you're taking care of it?
Actually, no. I have it out in a laundry area that always has a southern exposure, and then about November, I take it in, or late November, actually it was a little later this year than November, into a big area that has light coming in from almost all directions, light coming in from the east and light coming in from the south. It's just a big open room, and that really perks it up. I thought it was on the very end before I brought it in, and I thought, well, shoot, I might as well try it. It just perked right up in this, I guess it must be this better light. I don't know. But it still only gave me two blooms.
But that's the key, is the day length in late summer and fall. So make sure it's in a room where you don't use the lighting at night, and it should go ahead and form flower buds.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Nancy. It seems odd that it would only have two blossoms as opposed to none.
Yeah.
Is that?
So apparently maybe it was very close, but not quite sufficient overall. And so you got a few flower buds to form.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions and your 2018 garden resolutions. You can also email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Helen is on the line in Ames. Hi, Helen.
Hi. Am I on the air?
Yes. What would you like to talk about?
Well, especially this lady with this poinsettia. I just put mine down in the basement. And every 3 weeks, I go give it some water. It's been bloomed for about 7 years, and they've never changed the soil. Well, anyway, that's not the real reason I'm called. I try to get in many, many, many times. This little black bug that eats everything, all the foliage, everything. What do you call that little black bug?
Well, could you describe it more specifically?
Well, it eats everything. Everybody hates it. It's not a June beetle. It's
the Japanese beetle?
Japanese beetle.
What I've done to get rid of Japanese beetles, and this works, take some ordinary flour, F-L-O-U-R, and sprinkle it, and you'll never see one again.
Well, I'm glad that's worked for you, Helen. Thanks a lot for calling and sharing that. That's not one of the methods that Donald Lewis has shared with us.
Right. They're typically more difficult than that to usually control. Weather is good as far as if the weather is unfavorable, that can affect their population. But typically, we really can't do much to affect the population. So hopefully, so far this winter hasn't, I don't think, really affected them or impacted them, because we had very cold temperatures, but we had snow cover. And so the soil temperatures really haven't gotten that cold. If we hadn't had any snow, then the soil temperatures may have gotten cold enough where it may have actually destroyed some of the Japanese beetle larvae.
Right. Thinking back to our polar vortex year, we were wondering if it was going to affect them, and it really did seem to knock that population back for a while.
Oh, yeah, for a couple of years. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll get lucky. We'll lose the snow and then freeze.
I don't know if that's lucky.
Right. Okay, maybe there's an upside to a pretty unpleasant experience. All right, let's go to Bill in North Liberty. Hi, Bill.
Yes.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
So my New Year's resolution is to use less pesticide in my garden, and I saved a praying mantis nest. I wondered when I should move that out of my outdoor shed that I'm storing it in and put it in my garden area.
All right. That's a great question.
Boy,
I'm
not an entomologist.
Donald Lewis would have answered that very nice.
But I think I would leave it in until probably April.
I was going to say late
until
March.
Until April?
So yeah, right in that area.
Yeah, just so that... you're taking them out from a cool place, and then at that time of year, it's warming up, and I don't think those temperatures should adversely affect the eggs in the pod.
Okay.
Yeah, and don't bring it inside.
Don't bring it inside, no.
I know that already. Is there anything else I should do to the garden area to prepare them so there's something for them to eat, or will they just normally find what they're looking for?
I would just make sure you move it to the scrubbiest, you know, most vegetatively heavy area that you can find, so that there is plenty for them to hide in and find stuff in and kind of do their thing in. We may be tempted to put it like in a nice, pristine spot in our garden, but that's not a pristine spot for an insect.
Well, and I have seen, again, without Donald on the show today, Richard, you can weigh in on this, but I've seen a lot of people collect these and they keep them out in the shed through the winter, and then they will bring them in to the house in a jar or something like that in March or April so that they get to see the little tiny praying mantises.
But then there's nothing for them to eat.
Right, but then you take them outside.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure you can find some stories about that online. Bill, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you very much. You have a great day.
You too. Let's go next to Julie in the Quad Cities. Hi, Julie.
Hi. We recently purchased an acreage, and it does not have a garden. But my husband would like to start a garden. Currently, there's lawn and an alfalfa field. So I was just wondering what the initial steps would be for him to start that. The soil is well-drained, but it's windy there.
Well, it's almost windy everywhere in Iowa. So, but as far as the first steps would be to destroy the existing vegetation or get rid of it. If it's turf grass, you can actually get a sod cutter, and you can cut the sod and use it elsewhere so you don't have to waste it. Otherwise, you can just till it up or use Roundup on it and then till it up. But I would do that first. As you do that, as you're tilling the ground, if you notice that it appears to be very heavy, a lot of clay in it, then I would add some organic matter. I would get some compost, maybe 2 or 3 inches, apply that to the area, and then till that in. And then I would go ahead and plant.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck with it, Julie. Thanks a lot for your call.
Yes.
866-780-9100 is the number. And we coincidentally got 2 emails about growing lavender. So the first one is from Susan and Jewel. She says, my question is, I'd like to grow lavender in my backyard this summer. Does it need direct sun? And are there any problems with growing it in central Iowa?
Well, lavender is finicky. It's a finicky plant. Yes, it does need full sun, but it also needs a well-drained soil. It does not like wet, poorly drained sites. So you need a sunny site that gets at least 6 hours of direct sun each day, a well-drained soil. They just do not like wet soils. They do not like wet soils in the wintertime either. So it needs to be a well-drained site. And even if you do that, on occasion, it may winter kill. It tends to do that periodically. So it's kind of finicky, not terribly reliable long term.
All right. And here's somebody further south. This one's from Holly in Fairfield. She says, we want to plant lavender near our beehives. A friend did this, and his honey has a distinct and wonderful lavender flavor. What's the hardiest lavender for southeastern Iowa?
Would that be Munstead, I think, possibly? There are a number of varieties. I think Munstead probably would be the best. M-U-N-S-T-E-A-D.
All right. So 2018 so far, the year of lavender.
Well, and I think approaching lavender as a short-term plant is kind of a healthy mental exercise, too, because you're likely going to lose it at some point, especially over the winter. And so if you think you're going to have this plant for 10 years, you're probably going to be disappointed. But if you approach it as, if I have this for 3 years, I'll be really happy, you'll probably be happy.
Okay.
All right. So, a good practice in horticulture and gratitude.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Steve is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Steve.
Yes.
Hi. What's your question?
Been trying to grow herbs indoors, primarily rosemary and thyme. Rosemary's doing fine, but the thyme, it's like fall leaves on trees. They just, it's really dried out, and I don't know, is that to be expected or not, I wonder?
I think in general, herbs are a little difficult indoors because they require a lot more light than even most of the sunniest spots in our homes can provide. It's also a lot drier over the winter in our homes, and they don't appreciate that either. Things like thyme and rosemary can be really difficult indoors. I think the easiest herb to do indoors is basil. And so if anybody wanted to start or if you wanted to try something different, I would definitely look at basil. I think the second easiest one is probably cilantro.
Okay. Yeah.
But it is a difficult thing to do, and it's primarily the amount of light and the amount of humidity we have in our homes over the winter.
Is it granted that it's difficult, is it normal for thyme to dry out and have a kind of a fallow season, or can it stay green all year round?
Oh, does it normally go dormant, basically?
Yes.
Yeah. So when we grow it on our garden, it will kind of go dormant. If you don't give it much of a dormant period, it may reel back in the winter just because of the lower light levels naturally. You know, we have shorter days, all of that stuff. But it would typically stay green. It wouldn't drop all its leaves or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Is artificial light worth giving a try?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you don't need any expensive LED lights or anything like that. You could just use a ordinary shop fixture. Just have two 40-watt tubes in the fixture and position those just a few inches above the plants.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Steve. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions, with your 2018 resolutions. We have this one from Angela in Iowa City. She said, "My family's backyard garden is a monarch way station, and we hope to add more milkweed varieties to the wildflower buffet this year." And that's, I think, a lot of us in trying to plant milkweed. We do plant common milkweed, which grows really, really well, but there are a lot of varieties.
There are. And the two best ones, I think, are butterfly weed and rose or swamp milkweed. Those last two are perennial plants. They're native to the area. They're easy to grow, and they don't spread invasively. They're not a weed. So pretty plant and very beneficial to the insects.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me today, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. We're talking about your 2018 garden resolutions. We're taking your questions. The number to call, 866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, is also here. Here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Chris is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
What's your question?
Okay, I've got, last 2 years I've had these little stink bugs. I had a big problem with them. I've also had moles, and I keep planting hostas and they keep dying. I don't know if the three are related or if I can get some advice on how to at least get rid of the moles and the stink bugs.
Well, as far as the hostas, I don't think they're being destroyed by the stink bugs or the moles. Basically, moles feed on insects, earthworms, other things in the soil. They don't really feed on plant roots. Now, they can damage plants when they basically tunnel underneath the ground and they have to chew their way through the roots, but they're not eating the roots. So they typically usually don't destroy many plants. As far as controlling them, if you want to get rid of them, trapping is the best way. It's just not easy. You have to be patient. You have to be persistent. It may take several weeks. You typically use a trap, and you have to keep on moving it around. And eventually, they'll make a mistake, a fatal mistake, and they're gone. They don't live in large families. They tend to be fairly solitary. But if you have a favorable site, you'll probably have a neighboring mole move into the area. So it's not going to be a permanent solution. You have to keep on doing it periodically.
Okay. Okay, and then I've got a small strip of land next to my, it's just a real narrow next to my driveway. Usually plant annuals there, and it looks like birds have been diving down into the dirt. You'll see little divots, and I'm assuming they're going after the stink bugs.
I'm not sure of that. Now, they may be after some insect in the ground, but I don't think a stink bug. Sometimes they go after grubs, for example. especially in late summer, they might do that because they're near the surface. And you'll have things like crows maybe do it. You'll have skunks and raccoons do it where they dig up areas looking for the grubs. But for stink bugs, no, I don't believe so, no.
All right. Chris, thanks a lot for your call. Hope that helps you out a little bit. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions or your 2018 garden resolutions. Here is one from Clinton. I'm right on the northern Iowa border, Scarville, Iowa. I'm thinking about a peach tree here. We're on the border of the Zone 4B and 5A, but this past week's cold weather means any Zone 5 peach tree would have had buds would have killed or been permanently killed. So a contender is the self-pollinating variety. How do I protect a peach tree from winter scald, occasional low temperatures, to early spring bloom?
You really can't, unfortunately.
So that far north, they're mostly out of luck?
You're out of luck because you really can't protect it. You can't cover it with a tarp or anything of that nature, so you really can't. And as far as hardiness, you could try a white peach, which is kind of a wild-type peach. It tends to be hardier than the cultivated varieties, and so you might want to look for that. But when you get temperatures of 20, 25 below zero, that's typically going to kill the flower buds, at least. It may damage the actual tree itself also. So you really can't do much to protect the trees themselves.
Okay, bummer. But there's not a lot to be done.
No.
Right? We're going to keep asking you, Richard. Because everybody wants a peach tree.
I know. When they do produce, and they do periodically, especially in southern Iowa, you'll have a mild winter, you'll have a nice spring, and the trees will just be loaded, and they taste terrific right off the tree. But that doesn't happen very often in Iowa, unfortunately.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Al is on the line in Ottumwa. Hi, Al.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got a question about well-drained soil. So how do you tell if you got it, and how do you get it if you don't have it?
Well, one good way would be, let's say, for example, you have a site in your yard, and you really have a really, really hard rain, a really heavy rain. And then it ponds basically in an area. And it may stay there for several hours, okay? That would be a sign it's a poorly drained site.
Okay.
If you have a poorly drained site, one way to improve that is to bring in some organic matter and maybe raise up the area a little bit, for example. So you could actually create a berm if you needed to. But if you have a poorly drained site, I would definitely consider bringing in organic matter, chiefly compost if you have it. You could also use barnyard manure, but bring in some organic matter. I'd work it into the soil, and that should help quite a bit.
And how deep would you have to put that matter?
I would try to work it in as deep as I could, at least a foot into the soil. So if you could bring in, for example, 2 or 3 inches, work it into the upper 12 inches of the existing soil, that should help. And if it's a real low spot, then I would make create a berm where you'd simply raise it up so you have better drainage.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We heard from Gary in Trenton, Missouri. He wants to know how to keep weeds away from an asparagus patch.
Okay, well... labor, basically, where you go out there periodically and do some very shallow cultivation and hand pulling. And that's the key, is to do it on a regular basis so the weeds never get ahead of you. If they get ahead of you, if they start to grow, and worse still, if they flower and produce seed, you're just simply losing ground. So the key there is to keep at it, do it on a regular basis, and also have a nice, maybe weed-free border around the actual planting where things can't crawl in from the side underneath the ground like quack grass and things like that. So have a nice little plant-free border around the asparagus planting.
So like bricks or something
no,
like that?
No, just
or...
bare ground, just okay. bare ground.
Yeah, and I'm going to develop, I would love to develop a silver bullet for this because then I can retire early.
Well, I've heard people enjoy weeding. Well, no, I haven't really heard that. It's good for your health. I've heard that.
But if you do it, on a regular basis, it's not nearly as difficult, not nearly as hard. Unfortunately, we don't really have herbicides that really work in a home garden situation. So can't use that.
All right. Well, good luck, Gary. Here's a question from Brandon. I have a blackberry start that a friend gave me right before winter. Right now, it's in a bucket of dirt in my unheated garage. How often and how much should I be watering it? Should I be doing anything else to help it survive the winter?
Okay. Unheated garage. I'm wondering about the temperature. It may have gotten so cold that it may have possibly destroyed it. What I would do is, if it warms up a little bit, I would make sure that the root system is moist. So if it has some soil around it, then I would moisten it. If it has nothing around the root system, I would add something to it. They could use potting soil, wood shavings, moisten that and put that around the root system, because if the root system dies or dries out, it's going to die, and that's the end of the plant. So make sure the root system is kept moist, and hopefully not too cold, and then plant it in the spring. But I'm a little bit concerned about its survival at this point.
Yeah. Usually a better way to overwinter stuff like this in a container is to actually sink the container into the ground somewhere, even if it's just temporarily. But at this point, the ground's frozen, so that's not an option anymore.
Would it make any sense to try to put something around the pot at this point, or is it just wait and see?
Well, at this point, we've had some very cold temperatures, so I would think if there was any damage, it's already occurred. So it may be a little bit late for that.
All right. This is from Lisa and goes back to the conversation we were having earlier about flowers in the vegetable garden. She says, I'm a huge proponent of growing edible flowers. Some of my favorites include, and pardon me if I say anything wrong, borage, which have a cucumber-like flavor, nasturtiums, which have a nice, sharp, spicy flavor, calendula, which are subtle but have a sweetness and can be used to replace saffron. Daylily flowers have a big, beautiful flower, and they're sweet tasting. Most culinary herbs have an edible flower as well, the best being lavender, lemon balm, and chamomile.
Yep.
So some great suggestions
there. That's a
great
list.
All right. And Tom wants you to mention the name of the botanical garden in the Quad Cities again.
It is the Quad City Botanic Garden in Rock Island.
All right. I think that answers his question. All right. Let's get back to the phones. Mary is up next in Ankeny. Hi, Mary.
Yes.
What's your question?
How to grow blueberries in Iowa. But I also have grapevines that, not a lot of them, but they were producing for several years. Now all of a sudden, I've wasps in them, and they go into the fruit. How do I prevent that? Because we've had to just toss them for the last 2 years.
Wasps in the grapes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, as far as growing the blueberries, we can do that. We do have to amend the soil, though. They basically need two things. They need a well-drained soil. That's one requirement. Okay, it has to be a well-drained soil. They're very prone to root rots in wet, poorly drained sites. So it has to be a well-drained soil. They also need an acid soil where the pH is around 4, 4.5 to 5, which we don't have. Okay, so what I would typically recommend is that when you plant these, that you dig a very wide hole, much wider than you really need, but a fairly shallow hole. You take half of the soil and mix that with an equal amount of sphagnum peat moss, which is very, very acidic. So you have this 50-50 mix of soil and peat moss. You backfill with that mix, and that should effectively lower the pH. And then from that point on, I would basically go out there every spring with some sulfur and just sprinkle that around the plants every spring, because that helps to acidify the soil also. And I would also use like a wood mulch, like wood chips around the plants, because they have a very shallow root system and you need to conserve moisture. So I would do those things. As far as the grapes, I would assume those would be yellow jackets, possibly. And yellow jackets are attracted to fruit in late summer, early fall. And so the best thing would be if you have anything that is rotting in the area, get rid of those. Pick those and get rid of them, because that tends to attract them to the area. But that's about all you can do, is maybe discourage them by making sure you have a clean garden. Anything that's rotting, get rid of, basically.
Okay. With the blueberries, a person from Michigan had told me a couple years ago at Farmer's Market to use Epsom salts, which I did to lower the pH, and that worked well, but my plants will never grow more than like a foot tall.
No, that doesn't really lower the pH much at all, no.
Okay.
So we typically use sulfur to lower the pH.
Okay.
That really does a very good job, but it's very slow acting. It takes a long time to actually lower it. That's why we're using the sphagnum peat moss. That does it immediately. And then thereafter, we use the sulfur. But Epsom salt is not going to lower the pH, no.
The other thing I would add, too, about the blueberries is make sure you get two different varieties, because like a lot of our fruits, you need two different varieties for good pollination.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Mary. Next up, Corrine in Perry. Hi, Corrine. Or Corinne? Hi.
Hello?
Hi, what's your question?
I was just wondering if there were any suggestions for easy-to-manage houseplants in an apartment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I would think right off the bat, a philodendron.
Yep.
Pothos. Sansevieria.
Yep.
Our mother's-in-law tongue. Very, very easy.
Okay.
Yeah, I would add there's a plant that's called ZZ plant that is very easy to take care of, especially in low light. Another one that's called cast iron plant or bar room plant, because it's as tough as cast iron or would grow in a bar. That's another one that can be easy to grow indoors. And I also think probably the easiest one that Richard mentioned is pothos or devil's ivy. That one is a very colorful plant that is very easy to grow indoors.
All right, Corinne, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Randy in Forest City. Hi, Randy.
Hi.
What's your question?
I would like to have some ideas for how to keep the green worms out of broccoli plants without using chemicals.
Okay. Well, you can do that fairly easily. There are products that contain a naturally occurring bacterium, typically abbreviated BTBT, and it's a bacterium, and it's a fatal disease when these caterpillars eat it. They basically die. It does not harm other insects, so it's not going to harm, for example, a ladybug or a bee or a bumblebee, not at all. So look for products that contain BT. There are various trade names, product names. You can look for Dipel, Thuricide, but they basically contain this bacillus that basically, once the caterpillar eats it, they die.
All right, Randy, thanks a lot for your call, and let's slip in at least one more call here. Harvey on the line in Mason City. Hi, Harvey.
Hi.
What's your question?
About 2 years ago, I cut my lilac bush down about 3 inches from the ground, and it came up nice, but it was 2 years ago. Some of those leaves had this white powdery mildew. Some of them were okay. I sprayed it with a fungicide. And last summer, it was even worse, the whole thing. That was a very sick-looking lilac bush. Is the thing done for? Is there something I can do?
Well, powdery mildew is fairly common on lilacs, especially in partial shade.
That's it.
Yeah,
it does not get a lot of sun.
Yeah, that's the problem right there. So you really can't do much. I mean, you could possibly use some fungicides to prevent that, but you'd have to apply them periodically. I don't think it's going to destroy the plants or the plant, but it may not simply do much of anything just because it's not getting sufficient sunlight. So you might consider maybe taking some cuttings or digging up some suckers and moving them to a sunny site.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Harvey. And we are out of time. We'll be back with Horticulture Day 2 weeks from now. Richard Geron, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Aaron Stile, thank you.
Fun as always.
Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Talk of Iowa is produced at Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.